And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly, Mike Gregg, and Emilio Dinello. Starting on this Friday episode, we're tweaking things around a little bit on Cottage Talk, so this Friday's show will now be known as the FFC Weekly Roundup. We'll be focusing on more film-related topics to discuss and debate, along with hearing from you, the listener, as we have a section of the show called now Ask the Co-host, which I posted on the Facebook page for the show. And we'll be talking about your topics with the co-host. We will always be previewing the match at the end of the show, which will now include a new segment called What the Managers Are Saying. I'll be reading quotes from both managers heading into this match for the co-host to respond to. These are just tweaks for the show to hopefully make it better. So I look forward to getting your reaction to the new elements of Cottage Talk, but the show is still going to be Cottage Talk. But before we do anything, I have to bring on all my co-hosts. First, I'm going to start with Mr. Mike Gregg. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, Emilio. Hi, Dave. Yeah, doing well. Looking forward to the game. The international break seems to have gone on forever, but back to the real business tomorrow.
Absolutely. I look forward to the match tomorrow. The match is going to be streaming internationally, so hopefully I can watch that. Emilio, how are you doing, my friend?
Well, hi there, Russ. Hi there, Mike, David. Yeah, it's good to be back. And yeah, it's been a few weeks. Things all gone a little bit quiet. We had all that buzz of excitement in the lead up to the transfer window. Everyone digesting the new players, the ex-players of Exeter. We then had an international break, which wasn't the most entertaining of international matches from an England perspective. But otherwise, yeah, let's get back to Fulham Football Club. That's what we all love and dream about week on week. So yeah, looking forward to the show.
I'm very much looking forward to doing this with you guys. Mr. Holly, how you doing?
Good evening. Good evening, Mike and Emilio as well. Well, yes, I've tasted what it's like to be a champion. You know, my quiz team, we are the best team in London, in the league. We have won the league. So I want to be a champion with Fulham as well, if we can. Am I asking too much? Because I tell you what, it's fantastic being a champion, winning something, especially when you've had a hand in it. But it's also been a sad week as well, because I've seen my eldest, the Corley Woodrow fan club, off to uni today. He is no longer with us. He's an independent young man. It's quite a difficult thing. And I just received sad news from New Zealand as well, unfortunately. And Anthea tells us, unfortunately, that the flowers that she received for her birthday are now dead.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, congratulations on your son, David, and it's a good thing that he's off to university, and I wish him the best. All right.
Yeah.
There's
one more good news as well.
Oh, please. I need more good news. Please.
The good news, for me, the manager of Halifax, what am I talking about? It's a Goldman for you. The manager of Huddersfield has won manager of the month. Always the kiss of death. Always the kiss of death. It's got to be great news, doesn't it?
Okay. Well, I will take that as good news then, David. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm actually going to start with you. We're going to go into the Cottage Talk Roundtable. And actually, we're going to talk about a subject that starts with a tweet from our co-host. Mike Gregg tweeted this the other day in regards to Hugh Jennings. Quote, this is from Mike. This is the man Khan has to tie down with any contract he wants. David, do you agree with Mike? But more important, is he the most important employee with Fulham to re-sign?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's a chicken and egg scenario. Obviously, a lot of the successes we've had with players have been down to this man.
Yeah.
But you know, is it the man? Is he the most important man now for the future, or do we need to make sure that the man who's in the driving seat needs to be the man we tie down? Because you know, do we want success today, or do we want it tomorrow, or sometime in the future? And, you know, we've had this scenario where we want success in the future. We want to build to a new successful team. But it's sort of tomorrow never comes scenario, and a little bit of it is we want that success to come now. So I think it's important that this man stays at the club, but I don't think personally that he should be sort of over and above anybody else the most important person. I think he has a very important role, and I think it just, you know, for me it's what we talk about with the team. We don't want individual stars, we want a team, a unit. And I think all these people have an important place, and so yes, he is important, but not more important than anyone else.
Okay, very good. Emilio, over to you. Thoughts on Hugh Jennings? I thought Mike really put out a very interesting tweet. I agree with him that Hugh Jennings, give him whatever he wants, within reason, But is he the most important person to resign, or is it Slavica, or is it a player? I'm curious your thoughts on this. All right, did we lose a million?
Hi there, Russ.
Oh, there you are.
We've had a few technical issues my end this evening, so I missed what David said, but I think he is critical to the success of the club. You know, we're not a multi-million-pound investment club that can start paying 10, 20 million pounds on players. You know, we build from youth, development through the under-13s, under-16s, under-18s. This man is crucial to the long-term success of this club. You know, it's how many players have we got through all the youth positions into the first team squad? We've had a number of players who've gone into the first squad, and unfortunately, we've had to sell on, as a typical Fulham Football Club does. We're a selling club, but he is critical to the future success of our club. It's, you know, we do need to retain him, but you know, I think it's imperative. I don't think he's the most critical person at the club. I think, you know, it's a team effort here. We need to retain the coach. We need to keep the youth and the investment bottom up, and keep the investment top down as well. I don't think, you know, it's a sole signing for the club. We just need to keep the balance of the squad, the balance of the management team, and just keep the talent coming through. Southampton have been a very similar to Fulham in terms of the players that they breed over the years. They've got a lot of players through the youth academy into the first team, sold them for 25, 30 million over the last two or three seasons. We've started showing signs of doing that ourselves, but we need to show success on the pitch equally. So I think we need to have that balance with a good coach. You know, keep firing every 6 months, and hopefully we'll have a more steady squad overall. So crucial, but not the critical signing that we need to make.
Okay, very good. Very interesting from both of you. And Mike, you're the one that tweeted this out. And when I saw this, my first thought was, absolutely, give this guy whatever he wants within reason. But then I started to think about, well, in the realm of Fulham, who's the most important person? You know, you could go all the way to the chairman, to Ali Mack, to whoever else you want to think about, to Slavica, to the players. Who's most important? And Emilio brought up a good point. It's about balance, because my first thought was, he's our future. He's building our future. So is he the most important? Maybe Emilio's right. Maybe it's just a balance of keeping our best people, and that would include Hugh Jennings. I want to get your thoughts on this. The priority, is it more of a team effort, keeping your best employees and not just focus on just one, even though I'm focusing on Hugh Jennings here?
Well, I mean, I'm going to disagree with Emilio and David there. I do actually think, you know, he is... You know, the owner is the most important person at the club. You know, then you have the manager, because he's the figurehead of the first team. But, whether you want to call Rigger director of football, whatever, you know, is either more important. But really, everything that underpins it, the foundations since 2010 when he joined, is Hugh Jennings, along with Malcolm Ellis. And, you know, we've seen the players they've started to produce over the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, it's a different argument about whether they've been dealt with correctly. You know, that's completely different. But, you know, having listened to him twice now, speaking about the club and the philosophy and everything involved in bringing these youngsters in, for me, he is the most important person. He is the, you know, managers will come and go. First team players will be brought in and sold. And all that time, he's there, you know, a couple of rings below that, signing these youngsters, spending lots of time with the parents, showing them around the club, you know, and bringing in the right staff as well, you know, because that's what he oversees as well. So for me, he is the most important thing. You take the Borough game, and, 10 of the 18 came from the youth setup. So he was instrumental in bringing in, you know, those 10 players into the club in one way or another. And, you look at Brentford, they scrapped their youth development team. And so it will just be squad players that they look to bring in. So for me, future-wise, yeah, he is the most important thing. Of course, Jokanović is vitally important, and you want to keep him as well. Managers will come and go. Let's face facts, that will happen. And, we have a quick tot up. How many managers have we had since since Hugh Jennings joined, was it? Six, seven, you know, who knows? But no, for me, he is the most important person outside the first team structure. And yeah, I would, you know, try and sign him up for as long as possible, because you're looking at the future of the club and bringing players through both to play for the first team and financially to sell for sustainability. You've got to be honest about that as well.
No, very good point there, Mike. You know, I'm glad that you broached it that way. It's for the first team. It's to bring players through, but also to sell off, because it's a business as well. Emilio, I want to go back to you. Thoughts on what Mike just shared. Mike does see Hugh Jennings as the most important person. So I'm curious what you thought about what Mike just said there.
Yeah, I think the one crucial point there is, Mike rightly said, is managers come and go. You know, we want some stability bottom up, and you know, if you know, we've seen all the crop of players that have been coming through over the last six seasons. We have been successful in our youth squads. We've gone to tournaments abroad. You know, we almost won the FA Youth Cup two or three seasons ago. So, yeah, that's the success of, you know, of Hugh Jennings, you know, bottom up. So, yeah, you know, I don't disagree with necessarily with Mike. It's just, I think the club needs to sell play. I think we'll always be a selling club. I don't think we can always get around that. And if, you know, with the success of the youth squad and the academy and all the players coming through the rank, then financially it's somewhat, to some extent, it's keeping the club afloat. So he is crucial to success. We have done well over the last 6 years. You know, that must continue. We've got good facilities, good training facilities as well. Players are coming through up into the first team. And, you know, whilst we're in this division, it's more likely that some of those players will get the opportunity to play in the first team. What will happen if we were to get promoted to the Premier League? You know, how likely are some of these players, you know, what their capabilities to play in the Premier League? So it's crucial that we've always got quality coming through the ranks, and healthy competition is not necessarily a bad thing. So I accept a lot of the comments that Mike said, and I don't disagree with them.
Okay, very good. David, I'm going to give you the final word on this, because I think Mike brought some very good things to this conversation here. Because if you're looking at the long-term future, Mike is right. And Emilio is right, too, because even if we get back to the Premier League, and let's hope that that happens sooner than later, you still need the youth setup. I'm talking about Emilio, brought up a very good comparison. Southampton, look how Southampton have done. I always talk about Southampton. So I know that, you know, you and Emilio differ a little bit with Mike, but do you see where Mike is coming from on this?
Well, Mike's identified, you know, a very crucial member of the team. But I think it's kind of two different scenarios. One is a continual conveyor belt of, you know, finding the best youngsters. Another one of my weird words. Youngsters and nurturing them. I was trying to get youngsters and nurture together. It's a bit like my function the other week again. But, yeah, getting the best youngsters and nurturing them, you know. And it's a conveyor belt. It's a constant process, never ending, you know. It's like the Terminator. It will never stop. It just keeps coming till it gets you. Yeah? You've got to, like, that's one process. The other process, the manager, they come and go, as we know, and, you know, come and go too often in recent years. Even when you get a good one, unfortunately, they always leave in the end. So it's kind of two separate processes, really. There's someone is providing, you know, the ammunition for whoever the manager is. So it's very important, yes, you have someone there who's doing a good job. And I think, you know, we saw there was a bit of instability at one point when Steve Wigley left, I think, and that, you know, that was a bit of a downside. So everybody has their part to play. And then, of course, Wigley came back. The grass isn't green on the other side scenario, perhaps. So I can see what Mike's saying completely, that this man has been key. But, you know, we still haven't quite yet got to Southampton, I think, and then, you know, Southampton
sure
produced some fantastic youngsters. So, you know, that is the benchmark to look up to. So I think he's doing a great job. But who's to say we couldn't do even better? But, you know, as I say, it's two processes. A conveyor belt to provide ammunition for the manager in later years to use, really. So they both have important roles to play, but I wouldn't like to put one above the other.
Okay. I see where you're going on that, David. Similar to Emilio, it's about balance with you guys. But I see where Mike is going as well. All right. Let's move on. Mike, I'm going to go right back to you. You and I have talked about this person a little bit, but I want to talk about him a little bit more. There's no question that the defense has improved dramatically, so it got me to think of assistant coach Stuart Gray and what he might be bringing on the training ground. So do you think Gray could be as important to the coaching staff for Jokanović as much of his other assistants that he brought with him with Fulham? what's interesting about him, you know, I mean, he has stuck with Fulham even when Jokanović came, and I know that was part of the deal, but I actually thought that he might move on this summer. He's still with Fulham. I think, you know, again, I'm not on the training ground. I'm not seeing what he's doing there, but I think he might be leaving his mark, Mike. I'm curious your thoughts a little bit more on Stuart Gray.
Well, I mean, he's definitely there as a coach on the defensive side. And, yeah, I mean, if they were going to make a change, if they didn't think it was working, he would have left in the summer. I'll tell you what really pleased me is you do see him on the touchline talking to him constantly about what's going on. And then also for the team shoot this week, he was there in the front row, sat next to Jokanović. So he's obviously key, I think, to Jokanović's backroom staff. And we have seen a change in the way we defend at set pieces and more importantly, probably in game play as well. So we're seeing the fruits of the hard work in the summer, both attacking-wise and passing-wise, the way we're playing slightly differently. But then also on the defensive side, and that's what Gray is there for. That's his strengths. That's what he did at Wednesday, with giving them such a good defensive record. The question really comes with his ambition. Is he still ambitious? Does he still want to be a manager? And if so, you know, while coaching a team that's doing well like we are, you know, if it can, hopefully that will continue, his reputation will grow again, and I'm sure an offer will come along. So it will be a question of how important is he to Jokanović and what they're doing at the club. But from what I see pre-match and on the touchlines, he's very influential in the way we're playing.
Well, very good, Mike. That's why I wanted to bring this to the table. And I'm glad that you talked about what he now means to Jokanović and what is his ambition. We don't know. I mean, because they keep playing like this defensively, he's going to get opportunities. And I hope he stays, but it's going to be up to him. David, I want to get your thoughts on this because, you know, we've complained about the defense a great deal last several seasons. But I think that he's been an influential person helping out that defense and being basically, like Mike was describing, almost a right-hand man for Jokanović. Right next to him, he's been there with him every step of the way along with his other assistants. So I want to get your thoughts on what you think Stuart Gray has been doing with Fulham so far.
Well, it's very interesting that last season he came in to, you know, help the defence with this reputation for being, you know, a good organiser of defences. And it made very little difference, to be absolutely honest with you. I think the difference for me has really been having better players to work with, better defenders to work with. The defenders we had just simply weren't good enough in the main, and that is the long and the short of it. I think, you know, we've seen, unfortunately, Luke Garbutt hasn't really, you know, gone back with any great sort of reputation, and I think he's been loaned out again, hasn't he, to Wigan or somewhere. Of course, Byrne has gone, Stearman's gone, at least albeit temporarily. Ream is not selected. Broderoff, okay, didn't play last year. He's gone as well. Hutchison has gone. You know, we're looking at a whole new defence, really. Richards, of course, has gone. So, you know, it's sort of about you can't sort of make a silk purse out of a sow's ear or whatever the expression is. And, you know, despite his reputation of being good at defences, it was beyond him last year. So, yeah, I think he's, you know, this year he's part of a great team, and he's obviously had a good role to play. But last year, him and Jokanović, it was too big a task for them. You know, it really was. I think, you know, had he managed to do something last year, Stuart Gray, then he probably should have been made the manager because, you know, from what he had to work with, it was a difficult task. But, you know, we don't really know that much what he does, but he's obviously very much in favour because I'm sure he would have been out on his ear had Jokanović not wanted him to work with him or had he not felt he was up to the task. You know, perhaps his stats line up. Maybe our friend Calvin Klein or whatever he's called has run Stuart Gates Gray through his machine and the computer says yes, who knows? But he's still there. He's obviously doing something right.
Oh, good point, David. He's obviously doing something right. And that's why I wanted to bring it to the table because we haven't talked too much about Stuart Gray. I think on a previous show I did, but I wanted to bring it to you guys because, you know, I noticed him. You know, I'm not there like you guys. You guys get to see the interaction with him and Jokanović. I only get a replay, which doesn't really show it to me. But I get glimpses, and I just had a feeling that he had a decent influence on what's going on down there, especially defensively. So that's why I wanted to bring it up. Emilio, what are your thoughts about Stuart Gray?
I see Stuart Gray very much like a typical number two, a bit like a Mike Phelan at Hull City at the moment, even like Ray Lewington when he was at the club, when he was actually Roy's number two. He's a calming influence. And to David's point, if he was able to get the best out of a poor defence last season, we would have had a better record under his leadership. So, I think it's coincidental maybe that the fact that we've started off well and we've been defensively difficult to beat. But is that to do with Stuart Gray or the fact that we've got quality players like David mentioned? It's probably more likely the latter. But, he's got experience at this level. He, does provide a calming influence. He's got some experience in the UK domestic league as well. So I think all those factors are quite important to be like a number two to Jokanović. And, his defensive strength is key to, obviously playing for the back and try to score goals going forward. But, I don't think there's enough evidence yet to suggest that Stuart Gray being there in the background is one of the key reasons for why we're more defensively difficult to beat. I think we've just got better players, we're organised better, and we're literally playing from the back and making it more difficult for teams to score and beat us. So let's give it a few more months, and then we can maybe ask the same question at the turn of the year and see whether we're as defensively strong, difficult to beat, and whether Stuart Gray is still there or not. But I always see Stuart Gray as being a strong number two rather than a good number one.
Okay, very good. And let's see, that's a good point. Let's revisit this in a few months and see what his influence has been or see if the defense is still as good as it has been so far. All right, guys, let's move on. And, Emil, I'm going to go right back to you. I've seen this story throughout the week, so I definitely want to talk about it now. Do you think it was a good or bad decision for Lucas Piazon to criticize his parent club publicly in regards to his situation being sent out on loan frequently? He is now on loan with Fulham. What are your thoughts about this?
First thing is unprofessional. It's, that's just bad behavior in whatever line of business you work in. So that raises alarm bells from my side about how confident a player will he be? What value will he come and play Fulham? Did he come to Fulham at his own request, or was he literally being pushed and shoved to come over to Craven Cottage? So it's raising some alarm bells on my part. What desire does he have to play for the best club in London? So it's unprofessional. It's when we originally signed him, I thought I was quite excited. We did hear some rumours just before the deadline expired a couple of weeks ago, but it's his record at Reading last season was pretty average. If he was as good as he maybe claims to be, maybe there's a bit of arrogance there as well. Maybe that's not a bad thing, but will that arrogance wash with Jokanović? Not too sure. That overall, not the best statement to say in the world, and you just don't do that. So, they're still paying part of his wages, therefore it's not the right thing to do. So let the football do the talking rather than it coming out from his own mouth. So not good. It just raises some question marks around. Is he there for the right reasons at Fulham Football Club? Or was he literally just pushed and said, go and play for 6 months and come back in the new year?
Very good points there, Emilio, because the alarm bells went off in my head. And I agree with you 100%. Let the football do the talking. Don't let your mouth do the talking. Let the football do the talking. So I agree with you 100% on that. I was surprised, and I agree with your points on this. I do. I'm with you on this. But, Mike, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on this. Listen, I hope the player works out for us. I hope he helps us. But I was disappointed by his comments. Were you, or are you okay with it?
Yeah, no, I'm surprised at both your views, actually. I mean, if you actually read the full article, I think it's quite a balanced, quite sensible comments he was making. He's saying that at 22, he's tired of going out on loan and... he's glad to get out. He didn't want to go abroad again. He wanted to stay in England. And though the loan move seems to have only materialised on the last day, he seems quite happy to have come to us. Says he enjoyed his time at Reading last year. So I don't have any sort of reservations. It wasn't a blast in that sense. But I will caveat that by saying, any player who signs for Chelsea at a young age has to accept that this is what they do. They loan out 38 players a year. So, if anything, I think it's good that he's highlighted what, you know, lots of people know that Chelsea do, and you know, lots of opposing fans, of Chelsea, you know, don't like the fact that they have a, you know, such a massive squad that they just move out. But, you know, there's little bits in there that I learned, you know, that they have these practice games where the scouts come and watch them, and it just proves the point that all they're doing is stockpiling these players up. And how the FA or UEFA, you know, haven't done anything about this. And the only way is to restrict squad sizes properly, not just this paper exercise of 25 for the season, you know. It's a disgrace, really, the way they treat, you know, they deal with these players. But on the other hand, they all signed the contract, all took their agents all took their 10%, and they have to accept it goes with the job. But he's entering his last year in his contract at the end of this year. He's going to be looking for a position somewhere. And when he was younger, he had a good reputation. So I'm pleased to see him. He may or may not work out. And we'll see in January whether he stays or goes back to them. But I didn't really see anything too much in the article to get too upset about. I mean, if you look at his loan, he's hardly ever there anyway. So that's part of his argument.
Right.
Is he a Chelsea player?
I think where I'm coming on this is I understand where he's coming on. You know, his point of view, I just wish he didn't make it public, I guess. That's where I'm coming on. He's a Fulham player now. He's a lone Fulham player. I just wish he kept it private. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but then, you know, if he's asked the questions, you want players to be open and honest, and that part of it, I found it a really interesting article, you know. But I'm going to disagree with you both. I don't have any issue with this article at all.
Okay, that's fine. We can agree to disagree. David, your thoughts on this?
I wish Mike would behave himself because he knows my views on using bad language on the show.
How did I know you were going to bring that up?
Well, I think disgraceful language. You're going to wash your mouth out with soap if I see you tomorrow, Mike. I really will. You know, I think I kind of really do agree with, especially as Mike's upset me now, I agree with Emilio and Russ on this. I think it's poor taste to go out and public criticise your employer. I'm not saying, I haven't read it, so I haven't got the intonation of it. But if that's what he's done, I think it's pretty unprofessional. You keep these things to yourself. Fine, if you leave a club and you've left the club, perhaps move to another club, you have a little bit more right to speak your mind if you feel you've had a rough deal. But nevertheless, still, you know, it can be, you know, very much seen as sour grapes. On the other hand, there's some sort of schadenfreude here, and I think anyone to come out and publicly criticise the other team in Fulham is all right in my books, really. You know, it's good. It's great to hear, and Mike is absolutely right what he says about them having, you know, 58-man squads or whatever.
Oh, he's right about that. He's absolutely right about that.
And half of them never seeing the light of day, you know, not even knowing where the home stadium is or the training ground is probably because they've never actually seen it. They spent their whole life on loan while being apparently a player for this club. So I think, you know, I do have some sympathy with him. But, you know, I think the proof is the pudding, really. It's as Emilio said, you know, if his record's been fairly average so far, let's see what sort of player he is before we get too excited about it. You know, if he turns out to be rubbish, he can go back down the other, you know, down the Fulham road to where he came from or wherever he did come from. You know, and if he turns out to be quite good, then, you know, maybe the things he said may the other team in Fulham are less likely to want to keep him from now on. So there may be the chance to get him. Let's see what he's like, really. I'm not quite sure where he's going to figure, and we'll talk about that later because,
sure,
you know, we suddenly have seemingly a much bigger squad again if everybody's fit. So
absolutely,
there's not a place for everyone, including the new signings at the moment. So, you know, where are we going to see him?
No, that's a good point there, David. It's interesting. You know, listen, I'll make my own judgment when I see him, and I know you do that as well. I was surprised by it, but, you know, he has a right to voice his opinion. I listen, I, I live here in New England, and the New England Patriots don't talk about anything. So I guess maybe that's where I'm, where my judgment comes from, the way I feel about it. But I understand. I definitely understand where Mike is coming from it as well. All right, let's now go to our new segment called Ask the Co-host. This is going to be interesting, and we are going to start with a couple of lighthearted questions to all three of you. And David, I'm going to start with you. This is from our friend Ben Reed. I posted this on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Here's a question for all three of you. I'll start with you. Here's a question for you. Has David Howley actually ever been wrong? David?
Many times. Numerously. I'm probably right more than I'm wrong, but I am wrong a lot. And there's lots of times I'm wrong, and you never know about it because it's nothing to do with cottage talk. But when it comes to football, I'm usually right, but not always.
Okay, very good. Okay, for you, Emilio. It's like we're having problems with Emilio's Skype. So while we wait there, I will go to you, Mike. Emilio will be coming right back on. This is for you, Mike, from Ben Reed. If his wedding day falls on the same day as a Fulham home game, as mine did versus Cardiff in 2014, what will he do? Go to the match and make the bride-to-be wait till after the game, or miss the match entirely? Mike, this is from you, from Ben.
Well, it's all booked, so I will miss the game. I will miss the game.
Wow. Good man, though. I respect that. I respect that.
Yeah, it may be more interesting when I invite Fulham fans to come along. So it will test their resolve, I suspect.
Well, there you go, Mike. That will be interesting. Okay, very good. Very good, my friend. Very good questions. It looks like Emilio is back with us. Emilio, unfortunately, we're having some Skype issues with you, but I noticed that you're back on the line. Here's a question for you from Ben. How many wins will it take for you to endorse Jokanovic?
I must be the most probably the most pessimistic season ticket holder at Craven Cottage, and I'm still going to remain pessimist. My views aren't going to change just after, you know, 5 unbeaten games in the league. But, you know, it's not the fact that we're not winning the games or the lack of confidence in his ability to win games. It's more about some of the softer skills and some of the concerns about him making rash decisions and walking out of the club. That's still where my reservations lie in. But, you know, so far, so good. We're unbeaten this season. We've got a reasonably looking set of fixtures in September where we can start pushing on. But, you know, when we start playing the teams who you'd expect to be the top half of the table, top six, then I'll start to judge him overall. But it's still too early to change my views. So far, so good, but it's still early days yet. So, give him another couple of months, and then I'll ask me the same question then, and I might give a different answer.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ben, for those questions. We have a few more. This one's from Mr. High Noon himself, Gary Cooper. Here's his question, and it's actually a very good one. As for Jokanovic's contract, which I think is up at the end of the season, do the lads think with all the craziness, with the stats analysis, with the transfer scenario, will Jokanovic want to extend his contract due to his altercations involving transfers, Mr. Klein, etc.? B, will the board want somebody like Jokanovic who goes against the grain and speaks up and ain't the predominant yes man and stands up for what he believes, regardless if he gets us back to the premiership? Just thinking the whole Watford scenario. Mike, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on that?
So it's two questions there. Is there one, will he stay, and the second one, what was the second one? Sorry, Russ.
The second one, basically, will the board want him?
All right, okay. I think the board will want him. I think an extension will be put forward to him at the next international break, dependent on where we are in the league. Let's remember when Simons was sacked last year, the target was be in or near to the top six at the second international break, and he wasn't, and he was sacked. And I suspect a contract deal is in. You know, they've set targets like they do every year, and if he's hitting them, an offer will be put forward to him. And I think Jokanovic, you know, he's a little bit stung by Watford not letting him manage in the Premier League. And so why would he want to walk away from a team which is potentially going to be there next year? Because one, he'll get offered a contract if we're in a good position, so you want him to stay, and he might have a chance of actually managing in the top league. So I think, you know, as long as we're doing well, he will get an offer of a contract and he will sign it and stay, certainly to the end of the season. If we don't get promoted, that's a, we can have another discussion, but I think it's all, you know, I can't see him walking away, because how's he going to get a job in the Premier League otherwise?
Okay, very good. Amelia, over to you. Your thoughts on these two questions. One is based on Jukanovic, you know, wanting to sign a new deal, and then the board wanting to give him a new deal.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with him. I don't think he's not going to quit. I think he's made some wranglings and, you know, shouted from the rooftop on a few occasions. But if he can get the best out of the crop of players that we've signed, and, you know, increase his bargaining power as well. So that's the other thing as well. So the more, if we do remain successful over the coming months, we remain in the top six, if not higher, then, you know, there's, you know, his value will increase. So it's probably in the interest of the club to start sticking their neck out, making decisions soon, like Mike suggested, get an extension there sooner rather than later, because, you know, he will be successful. I'm comfortable that in over 2 years, you know, he will get the club promoted, possibly even sooner. But I don't think it's in his interest to leave. You know, you start to lose credibility if you start jumping ship every 6 or 12 months. So if he wants to be a successful coach in the future, whether it's at Fulham or another club, then stability is key. You know, getting promoted is one thing, but it's actually proving yourself in the next level and keeping that club in that division. So it's in his own interest to stick around, but it's also in Fulham's interest to get him signed up sooner rather than later.
Okay, very good. David, I'm going to give you the final word on this.
Well, for me, I think the questions that Gary Cooper asked are interesting, but I think they're almost too late, because I think, you know, things already came to a head a few weeks ago. That was really, for me, you know, the shit or bust moment, that when this all came out about Calvin Klein and overruling Jukanovic, or which type of underwear he has or something, yeah? So, you know, it's, I think if he was going to walk, he would have gone already, I think. We've come through that. You know, the shit has hit the fan or whatever. I think he was probably overblown anyway. But things have passed by. We've settled down. We've made a good start. This has continued so far. Bit light on goals, but, you know, it's very positive so far. So I think that's already happened. So I don't think we're going to lose Jukanovic now at this stage. It was talk he was going to walk if McCormack was sold, if other people went, but all came to nothing. So I think that one's safe. But the next question is planning for the future. You're right. I mean, you know, if things go badly, what will happen? But, you know, where do we judge badly? What is the real target? If we finish, you know, in 10th place, we're going to be much better than last season, but I know for all of us that's not high enough.
Right.
But, you know, would we really have said we expect to get promoted or playoffs this year from where we were? No. We talked about it being a perfect storm. So I think anything that's, you know, this we keep talking about this top eight. And top eight is a very frustrating position, because you can be in a good position without actually getting anywhere. So if we finish eighth, it'll be a great season in one respect, but frustrating because we'd be so close to perhaps potentially the chance of a playoff. I think it really, you know, the question will have to come at some point if and when we do extend, you know, talks with Jukanovic. But I don't think the board are going to be, you know, against that, because if the board were against that, they would have probably acted when he spoke out previously. And,
good
you know,
point.
That moment has passed, as I said. So I think the board will be more than happy, and it's just going to be, you know, short of there being some major diplomatic incident that comes up in the future, I think it's going to be purely on the results and the performance of the team. And if the team are doing well, regardless of Jukanovic and perhaps the fact that he's his own man, they'll want to keep him on longer, and that will happen.
Okay, very good there, Dave. Very good by all three of you. Interesting topic. Thank you. Thank you very much there, Gary, for bringing that to the table. We have a few more, and let's do these two a little bit quicker. Let's do the one from Billy Marsh. This is interesting, because I was going to talk to you guys in general about how many points do you think we're going to get in the month of September. This goes a little bit beyond that. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Billy Marsh asks, 7 games in 21 days. Predictions on the record of these 7 games. And I believe one would be a cup match. So I guess it would be six league games and one cup match. What are your predictions?
In September. He must be including the PPR
October.
Game on the 1st of October.
Yep.
Okay. So there I have. I've sat down, worked out how many points you're going to get from five, and now you want me to add another game.
Well, we can do five. Mike, we can do five. We can do five. Let's do five because we were going to do that. Let's do five. Billy, we're just going to do five. We're going to do five.
I mean, you've got to – you know, you look at those games and you look at the way that these other teams have started, and we spoke about all the fixtures at the beginning of the season when we did the show with David. And, you know, these are games we have to pick up points. So if you look at five league games, for us to stay where we are, you want to get 9 or 10 points from that. And, you know, looking at it as well, if you can get 8, it's not a disaster. But really, from those five league games, I want 10 points. I'm going to be greedy. And, you know, you look at the fixtures. I mean, you know, Birmingham, hard game, Burton away, a bit of an unknown. You know, Wigan at home, we should win that. Bristol City, playing them twice in a week, a bit of a pain. And Forest away, you know, it wasn't good last year, and they've made some interesting signings. So, for me, I'll take 3 wins and a draw from the 5 games and take 10 points.
Okay, very good, Mike. I'm sorry, David. There's a Goldman, David.
Yeah, I actually came up with exactly the same number as Mike did, believe it or not.
Well, great minds much think as, alike, right?
Yeah, much as he's been naughty today so far on the show, I'm not going to let that, you know, let that hold me against him. Yeah, I came up with the same one, really. I mean, Birmingham may be one of the tougher ones, but Burton should really be a win. Wigan, you know, everything we've heard about Wigan so far, the defence is a bit of a disarray from what people are saying, because we keep getting all these messages about how badly Darren Byrne's been doing for them, which I'm sure is slightly over-egged, but nevertheless.
Sure.
Yeah, we've got to create a hat-trick there. We've been to Preston and Blackburn in that neck of the woods and picked up wins, so let's go to Wigan and do the same there. Bristol City at home, again, got to be looking for a win. Nottingham Forest, the potential fly in the ointment. We've been rubbish there last season. The season before that, we were rubbish, apart from a bit in the middle where we actually were very good, but then we were rubbish again, and we lost that one 5-3, but last year was pretty poor. So, and you know, they have made some interesting signings, and it'll be interesting to see. So that's potentially the most sticky fixture of the lot. So 10 points, I think, would be a realistic haul from that. Or I think I'd be happy with that, obviously. If you look at the 5 games and 10 points, 2 points a game on average,
yeah,
you'd be very happy with that, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely, David. I think that's fair, and I think it's realistic, believe it or not, based on the fixtures coming up. And I go back to when we did the show, when we're looking at the fixtures, Mike was adamant about this beginning of the season being the time to get points. Well, this is really a very good opportunity to get a good amount of points. I think 10 is a reasonable amount to get. Emilio, what are your predictions for these 5 matches?
You know, I think, and I was answering one of the other questions, you look on the paper, you know, most of the, you'd expect, you know, 4 wins are achievable. I actually gone a little bit more conservative and saying a minimum of 8. I think it's 2 wins, 2 draws, and probably our first to be the season away to Forest. So I'm not too far away from the other guys. The sticky question is, can we beat Birmingham City tomorrow at home? I've actually got a draw tomorrow for that game, but we should be beating Burton at home reasonably comfortably. I'm not too sure whether our lack of goals might be a problem winning away to Wigan, so we might just get a draw. Home form, I think, will tell against Bristol City, and I think we may potentially lose it away to Forest. So I've got minimum of 8, but if we can beat Birmingham tomorrow, there's no reason why we can't get, you know, beat Burton, Bristol City, and maybe pick up a point or if not more at Wigan. But our unbeaten run may come to an end this month against Forest.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, last question comes from our friend in New Zealand, Anthea. This is for all three of you. After such a great start to the season, do any of you want to revise your predictions of where Fulham will finish at the end of the season? David, I'll start with you.
Anthea, I'm sorry your flowers are dead, but at this stage, no, I'm going to stay where I am.
Okay. Mike, to you.
I think I said 8th, didn't I?
Yes.
What I said. You know, the squad was eighth, really, is what I was looking at. I mean, we've made improvements. I'd like to think we can sneak a playoff, having seen what's going on. But come back to me after the QPR game, and I'll tell you where we're going to be.
Okay. So you're waiting for the QPR game. How about you, Emilio? Are you going to stick with your prediction?
Yeah, I think I said eighth as well. So I think I made a point on that show that 76 points would get you sixth place. I still buy that. I still believe you can scrape into the top six with 76 points. And if you win those 23 games, 14 at home, I think 9 away, and pick up a handful of draws, you've got 76 points on the board. So I think we all believe we're in a better position now than we were 2 months ago. We've done better than most fans expected. If we get the 10 points plus in the month of September, then I think we can revise our forecast. We won't finish worse than eighth, but I still have a sneaky suspicion that 76 points is more than achievable, and that will get you sixth place. So I'm probably going to say I think we will finish slightly higher than my original prediction of eighth.
Okay, very good. I'm going to stick right now. I said fifth, which is crazy, but I'm going to stick with fifth. We'll see what happens. I don't think I'm going to be changing that anytime soon, but I'm still glass half full, and I'm going to say fifth. All right, guys, let's now go to our news section. This is going to help us start our preview of the upcoming match. And this section I'm calling What the Managers Are Saying. I'm going to give each one of you a quote. There are two from Jokanović and one from Gary Rowett. So we're just going to go around, and each one of you will share your thoughts on the quote. Mike, I'm going to start with you. This is from Slavisa. Here's his quote with the build-up for the upcoming match. Quote, it's a tough team. If they're capable of winning a game like that against Norwich, they can be very dangerous for us too. We have to be motivated, play with energy, and put them under some stress. Yes, David, I said Norwich. I screwed up. It's Norwich. We want to be the dominant team and have control in the game and try and dominate with the ball. I expect they're going to be waiting for us in a very organized shape with many players and try to catch us in some kind of mistake. Try and find chances on the counterattack. I believe we're working very well. We rested very well, and we are ready for the Birmingham game. Mike, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts about what Slavisa had to share? It's funny because I saw an interview with Chris Martin. He said something similar, that he is expecting that it's going to be a team that is going to try to beat us on the counter. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, if you look at the way they played against Norwich, I mean, Norwich had 66% of the possession, and, they lost 3-0. So, they're a big side. They're very direct. They've got one of the worst passing stats in the division. Birmingham, Rowett hasn't really been able to reinforce it too much. He's now, into his third season. And, you do wonder how long he can sort of keep that team sort of just battling all the time. And that's what they're doing. They're very direct. And it's going to be a test of our newfound defensive abilities and the players. So, when we get to picking the team, and, it will be interesting to see if he makes changes. But it's going to be a tough game. Birmingham are always hard to play in this.
It is going to be a tough game.
The way they've sort of started this year, it's no messing around. It's getting the ball forward. I mean, again, you look at the passes in the Norwich game, short passes, 409 for Norwich, 183 for Birmingham. I mean, it's going to be something similar tomorrow, isn't it, the way we're playing? And long balls, they're averaging, around 73, 74, which is a lot. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to be pretty whenever Birmingham have the ball tomorrow. So, we're going to have to defend as a team, and I think it will be a good test of Button and his abilities tomorrow.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, David, over to you. I'm going to give you another quote from Slavisa. This is really going to talk about the squad in general, so I want to get your thoughts on this. Quote, we have a stronger, deeper squad. We have more quality. We started this season 2.5 months ago, and these players who started it at the beginning have done a very good job. I'm happy with them. I'm happy with the new signings, and all of us have to be ready to compete in what is in front of us. Immediately, what is more important is winning the game, and we're going to try and select the best choice for us. In the next 21 days, we're going to play 7 games. The Birmingham game is our first game. It's not the last. And I expect all the people in the squad will be available and ready to give their maximum in the field when they have the opportunity to compete. We signed 14 players, and we believe all of them will be available in different moments to participate to help us in this competition. All right, David, what I got out of this quote, I'm curious if you got the same. I always ask you for your starting 11, what you think he might do as well. I think, based on what he's saying, is that it's going to be difficult for you to pick a starting 11 because I think he's going to mix and match from match to match based on who the opponent is, which players fit that game plan. What are your thoughts about that? That's what I read into that. Am I reading too much into his quote?
No, it definitely sounds like, you know, he's said he's got a bigger squad now. He's, you know, he's prepared to rotate it as and when to fit each game. But, of course, it can be a double bluff as well, you know. You pick a side that proves successful. Why change it? You know, keep the opposition guessing. They think you're going to change it and you don't. I don't know. But I think when you look at the squad, there's probably certain players you would say are givens that they're likely to figure every game or most games. There's other players that perhaps are less so. I think, you know, there's certain players you would imagine who are going to start every game, and you could probably name them, and there's probably 3 or 4 of them at least. And then there's ones that could possibly change. Cause, you know, I was talking to my younger one about this earlier over dinner. Of course, we have people like Yozabed, Aiti, Aluku, Kearney, sort of all attacking midfield types. Of course, our new signing, Cabano, as well. And I'm sure I'll probably miss someone out, who all play this kind of role. So you could easily see rotation in both them starting and not starting, or in the positions they take up. Whereas, you know, in certain positions, I mean, you would imagine that, you know, Michael Maddow's going to play literally all the time, at least in the serious games. We may see a change for the League Cup, I think, as we may do in the goal. But I think, in the main, the goalkeeper and the heart of the defence will stay the same throughout. And what happens at fullback, I'm not sure yet, because now we have an extra defender as well. Are we going to see our new Icelandic superstar playing? But, you know, I don't think there's going to be a lot of tinkering with it. He's played literally the same formation every game. The personnel may have been slightly different, but the formation has been the same. So I don't think we're going to see wholesale changes. Could be wrong. Obviously, you could put another man at the back. We could completely change it. When Ryan Fredericks is fit, which is coming that way, he may decide to go to a wing-back scenario. I don't know, because that tends to suit that. So, you know, it's keeping everyone guessing, really, I think. And, you know, I don't personally see there being too many wholesale changes, apart from perhaps with a cup match.
Okay, very interesting, David. I found those comments fascinating because he does have a bigger squad. He has options. He can change it if he wants, but maybe he'll do what you just said. Maybe it'll be a consistent starting 11, and then the cup match will be different. I have a feeling, I could be wrong, I think he's going to rotate it a little bit, but we'll see. All right, Emilio, over to you. I'm going to give you the quote from Gary Rowett, and what's interesting is it kind of flies in a different direction from what we're talking about, what we're expecting from Birmingham City. So I'm curious your thoughts on it. Here's his quote. Quote, "We certainly won't be going there just to sit in and counterattack. We didn't do that against Norwich," said Rowett. "We're looking at being better at playing in different types of ways. But we know it's going to be a tough test. He's a good manager. They're a good team with some good players, and we look forward to going down there again." All right, Amelia, do you think his intention is to come and play at Craven Cottage, or is he kind of bluffing with us, just telling the media this is what he's going to do, but he might just counterattack? Well, what are your thoughts about that?
Probably the latter, to be honest. I think it's said very little there. It's just, you know, probably just being very conservative, keeping people guessing in terms of what tactics he will play. It's obviously quite clear from his initial statement that he recognises it, in fact, he's a long ball type of team, and they try to play on the counter attack. I saw the goals that they scored against Norwich, and Norwich were defensively very poor. So, despite having 66% possession, as Mike said, Norwich, you know, just made some poor mistakes, and their manager got a bit of a grilling from their fans. So he could be one of the first casualties in the Championship this season, in Alex Neil, if he doesn't but get more consistency. But as far as Birmingham concerned, they haven't really reinforced in the transfer window. You know, they haven't really got any star players. I think David Cottrell last year, who was their star player against us, and when we got thrashed 5-2, and again, that was a very flattering in favour of Birmingham, as was a Birmingham victory against Norwich. So I don't think they've got enough quality there to do other than play long ball and just catch us on the break. So we've just got to be on our guard. Jokanović will be acutely aware of that. And I think, to Mike's point, it's probably a good test for our defence. How strong are we? You know, can we? How resilient are we? So, you know, we can beat Birmingham City, but it depends how up for it are we? Because I think Birmingham will be up for it, but they won't have much possession. I think they might be looking for free kicks or possibly even penalties. So we've just got to be very, very careful, level-headed, and... You know, but I don't take anything away from what Gary Rowett said. I think it's just a typical sitting on the fence type of comment.
Yeah.
And don't forget the fact that also this time last year, or about 10 months ago, he was one of the candidates that we were targeting for the Rollers coach. So I think didn't we approach him? I've still got a lot of time for Gary Rowett. Unfortunately, there's no investment at the club and he's having to make do with a very average squad of players. So I don't think that's a criticism of him. That's just maybe criticism from the owner's perspective. But he's still a good young manager with the right attitude. So, you know, he will go places. You know, so, but at the moment, I think we're capable of beating Birmingham, but I don't think we should expect anything other than long ball and play on the break.
Okay, very good there. You know, it's funny because I'm going to share some information from whoscored.com to get our preview going. And David, why don't you call back in? Because we're going to go over about 5 or 10 minutes just so we can do a preview. So why don't you go and do that? And
okay.
In the meantime, I'm going to read some information from whoscored.com to get us going on this preview. Obviously, the quotes got us started, but this will continue it. Just to tell you where each team is in the table, Fulham are currently second. We have 3 victories, 2 draws, no losses. We've scored 7. We've given up 4. We're on +3 goal differential, and we're on 11 points. Birmingham are 10th. They've won 2. They have 2 draws and 1 loss. They have scored 7 just like us, but they've given up 5, so they're in a +2 goal differential, and they are on 8 points. Tells you a little bit about where they are on the table compared to us. Their strengths, according to whoscored.com, very strong stealing the ball from the opposition. They are strong creating scoring chances, attacking set pieces, creating chances using through balls, finishing scoring chances, strong all in there. Their weaknesses, defending against long shots, avoiding individual errors. They're weak there. They're very weak in keeping possession of the ball, defending against skillful players, protecting the lead. Their style, long balls. Attempt crosses often. Attempt through balls often. They take a lot of shots, and they do have a consistent first 11. Okay, before I go to you guys and we get more into this preview, I just want to share some information from a supporter of Birmingham City. He contacted me. He wanted to know if I wanted to know anything about Birmingham City. So I got his thoughts. I'm going to share some of his thoughts. His name is Daniel Bird. I want to thank Daniel for emailing me his answers to my questions. I'm just going to share a couple of them. And one was this. I said, should we expect Birmingham City team at Craven Cottage to sit back and wait to counter an attack? Daniel's answer, yes, you should, as that is the way we play against the perceived bigger teams in the league. As Fulham have had a relatively good start to the year, Gary will set out the team to frustrate and then break at pace, just like we did against Norwich, to great effect. And then I asked him, if you are Fulham head coach Slavisa Jokanović, what would be your strategy to take advantage of the weaknesses in Birmingham City? His answer, you should be attacking us down the left-hand side of the pitch with an overlapping fullback to take advantage of Jacques Mahagma's defensive frailties, along with Shotton and Grounds being very poor in this league. He also said he is predicting a 4-2-3-1 formation. Okay. All right, guys, so let's now get into our preview. And I'm going to start with you, Emilio. Who are your key players tomorrow for Fulham?
It's twofold, really. I think the pace, I think, will be the bit that will be key to the victory tomorrow. I mean, we need to be very patient. I think that's the key. Let's be very patient. Let's keep possession, which I know we will do. And as I said, reading from those stats you've just read, keeping possession is one of their weaknesses. So let them work around the pitch. Let's see who's the fittest on the pitch. So I think We've got quick players. We've got a bit of width there. We've got, you know, good attacking players. Let's get at them. Let's tire them. Let's prove who the fittest players are on the pitch. So I think I do have concern that we don't necessarily carve out enough opportunities and therefore don't score many goals. But I think the pace is going to be key to this, and the patience. You know, let's just keep possession, play the ball well. Kenny, I think, has got an opportunity to make his mark again here. But, you know, the likes of Aluko and Ayite, they're quite key as well. Odoi, you know, pushing up from full-back. These will be the key thing is keeping possession and attacking at them, because I think ultimately we've got strong enough defenders to resist any breakaways, and that's the key thing. We've got good depth in midfield. So I think the key players from my perspective will obviously Kenny goes without saying, but I think the pace of Aluko and Ayite will be good. I think we'll hurt them tomorrow.
I tend to agree with you there, my friend. All right. Now over to you, Mike. What does Fulham need to do to win this match? One of the interesting things that I wanted to get your thoughts on in regards to all of this is that Daniel Bird mentioned their weakness is down the left-hand side. So I want to ask, because he was talking about the overlapping fullback, do you think that we will see Ryan Sessegnon, Scott Malone, a team that frustrates us? Who do you go with? I'm curious your thoughts on that, and overall, how do we break them down?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you saw, I did a pick the team poll this week, and Odoi was picked as being the best, you know, preferred right back and left back. But, you know, really, I think Malone's done enough to warrant the start. I wouldn't make wholesale changes at the back. I would still keep the same two centre backs because, you know, Birmingham are going to give it a good go, and they're going to test whoever's playing there. And I don't think it's a game I'd want to give any of the new guys, a start. So, you know, I would play Malone on the left, and it would be Cabano, who, you know, they all swap around, but it would be him on the left as well, because IET might be sub if he's fit. But the key ones for me, because of the way we're playing, and I've noticed certain things that we're doing in picking the ball up off the back, and that's going to be Parker and McDonald if they both start. Well, McDonald will start if Parker starts. So for me, the two central midfielders plus Maddo and Callis are the key players tomorrow.
Okay, very
defensively,
good.
I think the front four plus the fullbacks can just get on with it. Parker and McDonald are for me, they're those shields for the defence, and the ones who get the attacking going as well from picking the ball up.
Okay, very good there. All right. David, I'm going to go to you, and I got to drop off for just a second. Please share your starting 11.
Difficult, but I think the easy ones are Button, Odoi, Callis, Maddle. Big question is, do we see, this is a difficult one, do we see Malone, do we see Sessegnon, or do we see Sigurdsson come in and a change for a reshuffle in the back? Difficult to say because they are quite a big, strong team, and maybe down the middle, do we need a bit more height? I don't know. That's the one for me. I would have thought that, you know, all things being equal, you'd like to give Sessegnon the shirt there at left back, but maybe he feels that with them being a physical team on this occasion, he needs someone a little bit more experienced, a bit more prowess. So I think we may see one of the other two. I think we're likely to see Parker and McDonald together, although I have some concerns that they're a little bit too similar and a bit too pedestrian in a way. You know, it's no coincidence that we have been a lot better in this season so far, and they've been part of that. So I think they'll continue, as will Kearney. I think up front is a given. We're going to see Chris Martin. So the other two positions really are out of who. And I think we'll probably see Cabano and Aluku. Ayiti may be from the bench on this occasion, obviously along with other potential new guys. Not sure about, of course, our signing from Scotland, Maloney, where we're going to see him. You know, where it seems to be forgotten about the last week or something. But
David, you're talking about Johansson.
What am I talking about, Maloney? This is where you came back. See, look, I'm wrong again, Ben, if you're listening. You see, look, I'm I've learned today in today's flat all 44 presidents of the state in order, and I've got all weird names in my head, so please excuse me. But yeah, Johansson, of course.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm not sure where we're going to see him fit in, but I don't think tomorrow. So really, the big question is that fourth defender. Will it be Sessegnon? Will it be Malone? Or will it actually be Sigurdsson coming in with a reshuffle? But I think Chris Martin is a given as a starter. And I think it'll be Cabanis over Aiti because he's coming back from injury.
Okay, very good there, David. Let me ask you, Chris Martin coming in, I think he's going to play a vital role. You know, getting the ball to him and getting those guys, you know, basically passing it from that point on. Would you agree that he could be I've heard what Emilio had to say and what Mike had to say, but could he play a vital role tomorrow on a team that makes it difficult for us to break them down?
Well, I think he offers more rounded game than what Matt Smith can offer. So Matt Smith is a very much a route one kind of player. If it is a difficult team to break down, if they're able to sort of counter him in the air, then it's going to be difficult perhaps for something else. So I think Martin will bring more people into play, hopefully. But I'm not ruling out Matt Smith playing a role at some point. He has looked, you know, dangerous at times when he's come on. It's just I think Matt Smith's never going to be a big goal scorer. He's going to create issues, but he's not going to be a big goal scorer. And we need someone who's a bigger goal scorer. Maybe that's going to be Martin, I think. But it'd be very interesting to see how it plays out, because if I have a feeling Birmingham are happy to sit back and nullify as if we're too slow and pedestrian and just try and hit us on the break, which hopefully won't be as easy as last season because we now have a bit of pace in our team. But it's not going to be an easy game. I wouldn't think it's going to be an easy game anyway.
No, I definitely agree with you, David. And believe it or not, you're going to hear that in my prediction. All right, let's go to predictions. Let's now go to the Cottage Talk Twitter page. And I had 205 votes. Win, 83%. Draw, 14%. Loss was only at 3%. So obviously the Fulham supporters are pretty positive going into this match. Unfortunately, I just don't have time to read the predictions from the Cottage Talk Facebook page. I apologize, but thank you everyone that sent your predictions. So, Emilio, I'm going to start with you. Give me your prediction for the match against Birmingham City.
In terms of what I said earlier, in terms of how many points we get in September, I had 1-1 for a draw tomorrow, so I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. It could actually be a penalty, a 2-2 draw. I think it could be some goals in this game, but it won't necessarily be pretty. I think that's tomorrow. I think the key thing is if we don't score within the first half an hour, then we've got to see how much patience we've got within the team. So I think we'll have to grind them down and potentially just maybe get a lucky break. But they've got some David Cotter. If he plays, he destroyed us last year, if I recall, at Craven Cottage. So keep him quiet and keep possession, then we should be able to not lose the game. I'm going to go for the 1-1 draw tomorrow though.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. It's always interesting asking you for your prediction. Are you going to be on the fence as always?
Yeah, I'm still pulling the splinters out of my arse from last time. I'm my gut feeling is exactly like Emilio, 1-1 or maybe a 2-2 draw, I think.
Okay. And listen, I definitely understand that. I look at Cardiff City, that match, I'm like, we're going to have a same situation there. I hope not, but this is a tough team to break down, and I respect Gary Rowett. Emilio brought up some good points. When there was speculation linking him to us for the open manager job, I was thinking, he would be a good fit. So I respect the type of team he puts out there, and they're going to be difficult to beat. There's no question about that. This will not be easy. Mike, your prediction.
Well, considering it's going to be chucking it down probably during the game, and I'm expecting us to win, but I agree with the other guys. I think there will be goals, and I'm going to go for a 3-2 win.
Wow.
And we will be losing 2-1 at some stage, but our fitness will tell and get us over the edge. But it will be a hard game tomorrow. They always give us a hard game. They've got some of their players always give us problems. But on the other hand, they are facing a team which, potentially has only a couple of, maybe three players from last season. So as it's all changed for us. So let's see. But 3-2, Fulham.
Okay. I actually saw on the College Talk Facebook page just many Fulham supporters gave this prediction, so I'm going to go with this prediction. I am going to predict a victory. I'm going to say 2-1, but I think it's going to be a nervy match. I don't think this is going to be easy, but I'm going with a 2-1 victory. I see where Mike's going with 3-2, but I'm going to stick with 2-1, so that's going to be my prediction. Guys, fantastic show. It is time to wrap it up. Before we do, I'll go to you first, Mr. Greg. Final thoughts before we go? Great job, by the way.
Thank you. Last thoughts. Just good to be back talking about Fulham and the fact that we're doing well and there's a game tomorrow. And as I say, I did a couple of polls this week. Over 420-odd took part, which is the highest for those kind of polls, which shows the interest is back. You know,
yep.
Even the old man is looking forward to the game, and he hasn't done that for about 3 or 4 years. So let's hope we can continue it tomorrow, and it's not a damp squib.
Okay, David, final thoughts?
I'll be there with my bar of imperial leather tomorrow, anyway. So if I see Mike, you can at least have some decent soap to chew on. If not, in the rain, I can take a nice shower anyway after the match. Otherwise, yeah, just glad to be getting back into it as well, obviously, and seeing the squad now complete as it stands and how they perform on a fairly tough test.
Okay, very good there. All right. Emilio, your final thoughts?
Yeah, I think echo what the guys have said. You know, it's good to see more optimism amongst the fans on Twitter, on social media. So, potentially looking forward to seeing some of the new guys playing some part in the game, someone possibly coming on as substitutes. You know, hopefully some more fans will turn up to the game. I know the game against Cardiff City was in August. You know, many people were away, but only 15,000 people turned up for that game. So hopefully we can get more towards 20,000, start getting the regular supporters coming in week in, week out. So hopefully we're a bigger crowd. You know, I'll be there taking my videos as usual. So keep an eye on those, all the fans around the world, if you want to see some snippets of entertainment and hopefully some goals. I'll do my best to get a live recording of the goals. But, yeah, please do keep an eye on the website, and hopefully fans not able to attend the game can get some snapshots of live entertainment. So, looking forward to the game, but I think Mike said it's going to be pouring with rain tomorrow, so that I'm not sure if that's going to favour us. That will play into Birmingham's hands, so hence, you know, we just need to be on our guard.
Okay, very good there. And, yes, please do check out Emilio's live videos, but also check out Mike's Periscopes on Twitter. Mike does an excellent job as well, so please check both of them out tomorrow if you're at the match or if you're international like myself, because I watch them all. I watch all of Mike's. I watch Emilio's. Both of you guys do an excellent job, and thank you for doing it because it helps me feel a little bit more like I'm there even though I'm so far away, so I really do appreciate that. Guys, excellent show. Great show. This is fun. I hope you guys enjoyed it, but it is time to wrap it up. For Emilio, Mike and David, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Have a great night, guys.
Good night, everyone. See you tomorrow at the game.
Bye. Good night, everyone.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look down.